Hey, Dave Weiner here. It's, what is it, the 18th of August, 2007. And you know, it's been a while since I did a podcast, and I thought, maybe today's a good day to do one. Lots of thoughts on my mind. It's been quite an interesting week. And the thing I wanted to talk about first was ID systems. Oh, there goes Skype. Hold on. Let's see somebody. I'm waiting for a call. Maybe it's not the best time. Well, I'm waiting for a call from somebody. So if the call comes in, I think I'm going to have to turn this off. But anyway, open ID systems. And there was an interesting piece posted by Brad Fitzpatrick, who was formerly a guy working on LiveJournal at Sixpart. And then he's now taking a job at Google. And one of his claims to fame is having done the initial work on OpenID, I think. I think OpenID was first supported in LiveJournal, and it's spread pretty far from there. But, and there's a big caveat on that, while there are lots of systems that will allow you to use OpenID, meaning that your ID on their system is an OpenID. There aren't that many systems that will accept an OpenID. In other words, and this is very consistent with the sort of selfish interests of software or system operators, is they want to host your information, and because that's how they get value. That's how they get, whether they actually get dollar value from it, that's how dollar value is assessed in the technology world. So, you know, it's a function of how many users you control, I think, is the way they look at it. And then they, you know, when they're appraising the value, they look at, well, how easy is it for you to sell stuff to them? And then how high are the switching costs for the user? So if you're in a position to sell them something very valuable, meaning they'll pay you a lot of money for it, and the switching costs are quite high, and you've got a lot of users, then you're worth a lot of money. If you just have a lot of users, but you can't sell people anything, that's like Facebook, your value is still very high. Their value, you know, nobody really knows, but it's in the billions of dollars. That's for sure. I think they've turned down offers in the billions of dollars. So there's a disincentive, real strong economic disincentive, for a system operator to accept somebody else's ID as an ID on their system, unless they think there's a way that they can convert you to having an ID on their system. And fundamentally, there's so much invested in the system working the way it works now, that it's going to be hard to get wholesale change in how it works, because it's going to involve coming up with a new way of appraising these service operators. And if you're the management of a company whose value is in the billions of dollars, and you start doing things that make the value go way down, you know what's going to happen. You're going to get fired. So there's limits about what these guys can do, because they know that they will get fired. And from the stockholders' point of view, it makes perfect sense that they would be fired if they did something that radically decreased the value of their stock, then, you know, they'd get fired. So while Google is supporting Brad's work, because he just got a job at Google and he's writing this paper and everybody's looking at it and they're all thinking about it because it's got a really cute title, but no real new information, or no real new ideas in there. I don't see them if they're there, and a nice illustration. But I think the real reason why people are paying attention to it is because he works for Google. And because people think, this must be the way Google is going to enter the social network world. Well, I wouldn't be so sure about that. A company Google size can afford to hire a lot of Brad Fitzpatrick's. And they can try out a lot of different ideas. And they could even try some ideas out. I'm sure they're not thinking this deviously, but sometimes net effect has that effect. Anyway, enough. God, boy, you've got to put the preambles out here. But they could be just thinking, well, let's just get all the all of our competitors thinking about, oh, that Google's going to go this route, and in fact, they're going to go on another route. Don't forget that Google has a fair number of users that are already on a social network called Google. I mean, there are lots of ways for Google users to relate to each other. And, you know, they can send mail to each other. Gmail, very popular mail application. They can use the mapping feature, and I think there must be some way to relate to it. Maybe there isn't another way to relate to a user through maps. Calendars certainly are collaborative. You can do collaboration on calendars and look around. I'm sure you'll find lots of them, but they certainly have an identity system. They've got lots of users there. Not as many as Yahoo, not because that's not been their focus. Their focus long-term over the years, although it's broadening a lot in the last couple of years, their long-term focus has been search, of course. And while they have cookies out there, they don't have a lot of their users, maybe even the vast majority of their users, don't have IDs on the Google network. However, don't forget that Google can acquire companies. And overnight, they could have, like Friendster, for example. I've heard that Friendster has half as many users as Facebook does. It's a lot of users. How much of Google's cash would it take to buy Friendster? Not a whole lot of it. And all of a sudden, boom, they could also buy LinkedIn. They've got a lot of users. I also have this premonition that Google's going to buy Yahoo. It kind of looks right to me that Yahoo needs to have an exit strategy, and Yahoo does not seem very energized for a new direction. Yahoo seems to be, if they haven't arrived at the spot yet, it feels like they're going to get acquired, and if they get acquired, it's got to be Microsoft or Google, and I think it's going to be Google. That's just a gut feel there. But let's just suppose, for the sake of argument, they did buy Yahoo. Then all of a sudden, Yahoo has a lot of users with IDs because they've had a mail system for ages. They made a big deal out of having mail, and they've got a lot more mail users than Google does. So my point being is that Google could quickly catch up in that area. They could have lots of IDs and start offering services to those people. The question is, what services would they offer? And I don't see Google as being, first of all, I don't see Brad's approach as having a whole lot of chance of working. As much as, sad to say, I don't see OpenID having much of a chance of working because that's not how these things happen. In the years leading up to the web, which I would say the starting year for the web, 1992, I think that's actually the year that the Tim Berners-Lee did his work, and so I think that was the first year. If I'm off by a year, it's 1991, but I think it was 1992. However, for many years up to that point, there was a lot of talk in the software industry about hypertext, and that goes back to HyperCard, if you remember that. That was 1980. My guess would be 86 on that one, so a good 6 years before. And then before that, there was all the Ted Nelson writing, and not a whole lot of work there, and lots of experimental systems, and lots of theorizing and conferences, and compatibility stuff, and people worrying about back pointers, two-way pointers, how are you going to keep the integrity of the network up, and all these kinds of very elaborate issues, and how are we going to, let's make all these different things compatible with each other. Saw that in a bigger way in the various networking protocols and OpenDoc. The computer industry has a tendency to want to be fair to everybody, okay? Because what they want is they want the support of every technology vendor that they can get their support. Maybe not everyone. Very often these consortia are formed to exclude, specifically to exclude one vendor. So in the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s, there were a lot of consortia that were formed for the purpose of excluding Microsoft, because there was a lot of people that were really scared of Microsoft. Not so many people scared of Microsoft these days, because I'm drifting a little bit. The reason why nobody's scared of Microsoft is because Microsoft doesn't have the ability to force RAM standards down anybody's throat, because the new software that people are using isn't coming from Microsoft anymore. It's coming from Google. And Google definitely is a threat there, and a very scary entity, because they can take control of almost everything we do with computers nowadays. They're getting close to dominance in almost every area that users care about, and or that where there's a chance to change things. You can't change the way email works. So dominance in email, for example, means nothing. You can't change the way HTML and HTTP work. Again, just too many people use different operating systems, and in those places, it isn't even Google that has a say about that. That's more Apple and Microsoft, but they could never change it. It is unthinkable. There's just too much deployment, too many different ways of getting on to those platforms. No one vendor has enough dominance in it to be able to move it, and it's just way too deployed to even think about it. But in all the areas where there's a movement possible, Google is just way strong, and getting stronger all the time. So it's scary. Google would not be the kind of company. The only time they would ever come in and present a Swiss Army knife approach like what Brad is proposing here is when they're way behind and they want to catch up. That was the kind of tactic that Microsoft used to use all the time. You know, they'd come into a market, you know, that they had no presence in, and then they would be very into, like, oh, well, let's make everything open and fair. And then as soon as they reach dominance, surprise, surprise, they're not interested in that anymore. It's human nature. A classic example of that was the web. And, you know, when Netscape was the dominant force, and they were out there making nice with everybody, talking open standards, you know, they were very interested in compatibility and interop, and they said all the right things, and they invested accordingly. They put a lot of money behind those words, and they hired a lot of really good people who were very much committed to those concepts. So the individuals at Microsoft were perfectly genuine about it and sincere. Gates, on the other hand, probably was very cynical about it and said, well, you know, as soon as we get dominance here, we're just going to move those people onto other projects, or if they want to quit, they can quit if they don't like what we're doing. But the money stopped flowing in that direction as soon as Netscape dissolved and Microsoft just totally took over that aspect of the industry. That was the end of their whole push to be open. Google is very much the same way. And, you know, you'd argue that there really is no way they can avoid being that way, because they are the dominant player now, and they're gaining more of that all the time. The only thing is that in the social network area, they are just way behind. Now, they also have Orkut, which is, I'm told, actually fairly successful social network. It's just not very successful in the United States. It's successful in Brazil and in India. And in Brazil, apparently it's market dominating. It's much more so than in the United States. There's far more people in Brazil on social networks than even in the United States, where there's pretty high penetration now. Brazil, that I'm told that it's 90% of the people in Brazil. I find it so hard to believe this, that 90% of the people in Brazil have Orkut accounts, and that they think of Orkut as the national address book. Yeah? Maybe it's true. I don't know. But they're not there, and they're not having experience running this. Those servers are running, I presume they're running in Oregon or California or somewhere in the United States, and the people that write the software are in the United States, and the support people and whatever, you know. They're getting experience doing this stuff. It's not like they're coming from an absolute standstill in this area. But my bet is that, you know, that what's going to happen is going to be very much like the other sort of juggernauts that came along. When, you know, go back to, I didn't ever finish the story about hypertext. So while the industry was futzing around with all these complicated issues about hypertext. Along comes Tim Berners-Lee, and just off in his corner, does something that's really lightweight and low-tech. It's the kind of thing one guy can do, you know? And, you know, I made an editor that can generate this stuff. It's just a plain text editor, after all. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Really, this really stood the test of time. And it just blew right by all the problems that the industry was so sure it needed to be solved before you could actually deploy into this network. And boom, it's like, it's a juggernaut. It just goes crazy. And this is one of the big principles of it, is that was not fair to the legacy. There were all kinds of people that had been doing work in hypertext, and if they had been going to a conference to try to work out their differences, sorry, but their interests were totally not represented. They were completely blown by. Not only were they blown by, but Apple, this is something I have firsthand experience with, Apple was blown by too, because it's not a WYSI environment. They had networking down, but all of the great things that were accomplished with making computers easy to use, the web wasn't that. So there were some compromises to be made there. And for that reason, a lot of people remained on the sidelines in the web for a lot longer than they should have remained on the sidelines. They should have gotten right in the middle of it, and eventually they knew that. They realized they couldn't fight it, and so they, you know, got on board. But they should have gotten on board earlier. It would have done them well to do that, but so they learned that lesson. So why would anybody think that it's the sort of like, let's be fair to all the legacy, which is what Brad is proposing. The whole thing about the let's do it this way thing is, pardon me, but it's bullshit. It isn't the way it's going to happen. The way it's going to happen is going to be some idiot that nobody's ever heard of. Sorry, not idiot, but some person people will call it an idiot for sure. Off in left field, a dark horse, who happens to develop a system that a lot of people really like. And it'll have a lot of the properties that the web had initially, and that anybody can deploy a server if they want to. And however, there may be one main server that a lot of people use. Again, that would be like WordPress.com. You know, WordPress, very successful blogging system. Doubt if it would have been as successful as it is if the only way you could have created a WordPress site was to go to Matt's, you know, WordPress.com site. The fact that you can, you know, just download the software and install it on one of your machines, you know, blogging itself wouldn't have worked if you had to go to one place to do it. The fact that there were lots of ways to do blogging helped blogging enormously to gain traction. So there'll be a lot of ways of doing it, and the way these things connect up will not in any way address all the problems that people think need to be addressed in order for it to work, but it will have a marvelous ability to scale and get very complex without being very difficult to operate. And it'll inspire users, and it will take advantage of things that users know today that they didn't know 2 or 3 years ago. So it won't seem fair to people who think that users will always fill in the blank. You know, the assumption 3 or 4 years before, you know, HTML and HTTP came out was that users couldn't set up their own servers. Well, those protocols were so simple that people could set up their own servers. And partially because they're so simple, and partially because the users got familiar with the networking technology. And so it wasn't so mysterious anymore. You have to take into account that users are not standing still. They're moving, and they're gaining skills, and where they needed their hands held before, 5 years later, they don't need their hands held there anymore. And software will have, there'll be opportunities in software at one point in time that a few years before weren't opportunities at all. So you have to keep your thinking sort of fluid in that dimension, because time does change things. Things change over time. The users don't stand still. Just remember that one. So I think that when we finally get a solution to this, a lot of us will wake up and realize that the solution's been there for a couple of years, And the users figured it out before we did. I think in a lot of cases that's the way it works. And if your mind is empty and you're not too preoccupied with a lot of other things, you may be there with the users and spot it yourself at that moment in time. But it never comes, never, ever, ever comes from the consortium approach. People getting together to settle their differences, to work it out so that everybody can be happy. That's never the way new technology layers come on. It just doesn't work that way. Well, there must be about a billion other things to talk about today. Let me just think for a second. Oh, right. So, what are some possibilities for this? Well, there are two out there right now that I'm aware of. That there may be others that I'm not aware of, but there's two out there that I am. One I'm very familiar with, the other one I'm not so familiar with. The one I'm familiar with is Twitter. The one I'm not so familiar with is Facebook. And I just intuitively think that Twitter may be, or it, or something like Twitter, or the open source version of Twitter, should one emerge, might be it. What you need is a very lightweight in the functionality area. In other words, the network itself should just be a network, more or less, not anything more than that. And it should be very open to people building applications in that network. And Twitter certainly qualifies. It doesn't have a lot of functionality, and it does have an identity system, and its API is just delightfully simple. It's very quick to get up an implementation of a client interface to Twitter. I know, I've done it myself, and it works great. Haven't had to go back and fix things. They don't break stuff. Give them a very high grade for the design and for the keeping it stable. So far, so good. Got a lot of users, but nothing like what Facebook has. And that's the other side. Now, Facebook is not open like Twitter is, but it could be opened. It could be. It's not clear that the users would support it. They're sort of reluctant to, every time they open that thing up, I mean, we all want them. In the tech industry, we talk about, oh, well, wouldn't it be great if they opened up? But they have a lot of users that wouldn't go along with them. That's another part of the Brad document that it doesn't ring true. He talks about people with networks, with users that want to join his effort. Well, they got a problem. If those users signed up without their information being out there, then they're going to have to migrate those users and give them the opt-in, because it's going to freak a lot of them out to find out that their ID is available on other systems when it wasn't available on other systems before. That we saw that freak out happen when they added the news feature to Facebook. I think it was a year ago or so, maybe a little bit more. The users were not happy about it, and they pulled back. They pulled back from that. And now they're adding it back. And Denise Howell was the one that sort of, in my world, that tuned into the fact that it has the RSS feeds means that information that used to be private or restricted access is now not restricted at all. So that's a change. And when that change happens, it's not so easy for them to make the change. So Facebook, as a company, seems to be liking to take risks and gambles, and they don't feel they have a lot to lose, which is very nice, it's very refreshing, and it's very welcome. However, their users may not be so, you know, they aren't as rock and roll, into rock and roll as the guys running the place are. So there's going to be some resistance there. It may suggest that either something like Twitter or Twitter itself or open source Twitter may have a better shot at it because it had this openness from day one. So every user coming in there presumably knew that you could go download software that would latch onto Twitter and would use their identity system and could actually be used instead of their user interface. As a result, you get a rich set of clients and they support new devices very quickly because the users take responsibility for doing that. So that's why Twitter has an advantage. They don't have, you know, it's Facebook's advantage is they got a lot of users. Facebook's disadvantage is they got a lot of users. Those users have to come along with them, and they may not want to. And it may create an uproar, and there's confusion, and that confusion may stop them from moving. So that's why I'm excited about Twitter, because it seems to have, you know, sort of a good combination. I'm certainly studying it because even if it's not the one, the one that eventually galvanizes this market or activity, whatever it turns out to be called, is going to be a lot like Twitter. So that's why I study it, because I want to understand it. And it's a fascinating thing. It's for something so simple. It's wonderful that it has so many facets to it. And again, that was one of the beautiful things about the web. It's also one of the beautiful things about RSS. Very simple, but yet it looks different when you look at it from every angle. It's kind of, wow, how did that happen, you know? So, a lot more things going on right now, but I think that that's a nice little unit. You know, the identity world in August of 2007, and we're getting pretty close to 30 minutes, which is not my normal 40-minute podcast, but, you know, 30 minutes is kind of nice round amount of time. I'm trying to think if there's some song that I'd love to play for you, something that I'm listening to a lot. Let me just, like, get iTunes up here, see what's up in front. I don't know. Play some Alice Cooper, maybe. Probably not. We'll just leave it at that. What did I do? No, we'll just leave it at that. So everybody, thank you very much for listening. This has been Dave Weiner and Morning Coffee Notes, and August 18th, 2007. And see you again real soon, okay? Take care. Bye.